Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. Welcome. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. People are already taking up the phone lines, but there are a couple left for you if you want one. It doesn't take long before they fill up, so give us a call, 888-914-9149. Let's start off with Susan. She called in first, so we'll take her first. Susan in Pittsburgh, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Patrick. I have a question. I was listening to Father Kubicki. He was talking about prayer. And I'm not very good at, like, bearing my soul. I have a hard time doing my examination of conscience. And I'm wondering if you could speak to, I like to say prayers. You know, prayers that
so
we know.
So if I could speak to what exactly? Flesh it out for me.
That's easier for me. And I wondered if you could speak to the difference between saying prayers and praying.
Ah, that's an interesting way to put it. Well, so when you talk about saying prayers, do you mean like rote prayers that we know from memory, like the Our Father and the Hail Mary,
yes,
prayers
like
that?
Yes, like the rosary that? Or various devotions or, yeah.
Okay.
That's much easier for me.
Sure.
But sometimes I feel like I'm not relating to God.
Right. I can understand that. So let's take a look, first of all, at what is prayer, and that will help answer the question. Prayer, fundamentally, is you addressing your thoughts to God. In whatever manner you do that, that's prayer. And there are different kinds of prayer. Some prayer is more, you might say, more common with those who are deeper in the Christian life, more mature perhaps in the Christian life. Doesn't mean that someone is immature, like personality-wise, but in terms of maturity in the Christian life, you can notice differences in prayer, and I'll explain what those are in a moment. So prayer fundamentally is when you open your heart and your mind and you speak to God. And whatever words you use, you don't even necessarily have to use words. You can just simply emote your feelings, your thoughts, your ideas to God. They may not even take a thematic form. You may not put them in your thoughts in sentences, but it just may be anguish. Think of the person who's grieving the loss of a husband or a wife. And there are no words. And yet that person is praying. When she addresses herself to God and is pouring out her heart in whatever way she can, that's prayer. So remember that, first of all, is that prayer has different forms, but that's what it means fundamentally. So the great masters of the spiritual life, they say that prayer generally follows three steps or three categories, and one leads to the other, leads to the other. Some people never move out of the first area, and that's okay. If you think of it as the shallow end of the swimming pool, you're still in the swimming pool. You're still getting wet. You're still splashing around. But for those who move to the deeper end of the swimming pool, there's more that they can do. They can dive deeper, etc. So that first area, the first step, or the first phase, maybe you could call it, would be what's called discursive prayer. And this is where rote prayers come in. And as you notice, the church gives us these prayers. They're time-honored, in some cases, nearly 2,000 years old. In the case of the Our Father, 2,000 years old, coming from Jesus himself. So when the apostle said, Lord, teach us to pray, he said, when you pray, pray like this. And he taught them a discursive prayer. He taught them a rote prayer, the Our Father. So that has pride of place, you might say. It's also the easiest form of prayer because once you commit it to memory, it's like knowing your times tables or adding and subtracting. You can just instantly slip into that form of prayer, and you're praying. You are praying. The second category after you go beyond the rote prayers, and one more thing about the rote prayers, those prayers, and when I say rote, what I mean is that we memorize them. It doesn't mean that we say them in a rote manner or we say them mindlessly. People can say them mindlessly. They can just clickety-clack, go through their prayers, and never really think much about what they're saying. That does happen. That's true. But when I say rote prayer, I'm not referring to that. I'm just referring to that we commit it to memory, and then we recite that same prayer like the Our Father. So then the second area, or the deeper waters in prayer, would be the prayers of meditation. Now, meditation is something that you can learn to do, and many people learn to do this, especially if they're, say, going into religious life. They learn how to meditate upon some truth of God. It could be seen in the gospel. It could be some teaching or some statement in scripture, whatever it may be. And so meditation it's an active form of prayer that goes beyond rote prayer insofar as you're exercising your intellectual powers to focus on this teaching. And as you're praying, you're thinking about it. It's almost like you're holding up some beautiful crystal up to the sun and you're examining it from different directions and seeing how the light shines through it from different directions. That's an analogy. It's not an exact analogy, but that's a way of thinking about meditation, where it's an active, more penetrating, more focused form of prayer, and it's deeper. Then the third and the deepest area of the pool is what's known as contemplation. Now, contemplation often is not something that the average Christian gets to, and it's not always clear when you get to it. But the great saints who have gotten to that point, like Saint Teresa of Avila, who wrote a lengthy treatise on this issue, her beautiful book called The Interior Castle describes this process. And when you get to that phase, that is a different form of prayer altogether, because you're not saying words. You're not actively using your imagination or your intellect to focus on something and consider it from different perspectives. Rather, the best way I can describe it is you're gazing at God. St. John Vianney, the curé of Ars, famous for his prayer life, he was once asked by one of his parishioners, you know, when you pray, what do you do? What do you say? And he said, I look at the Lord and the Lord looks at me. And that's a very succinct way of explaining that type of deep prayer, where you're no longer actively, you know, trying to pray in the senses that I described before, but rather you're just sort of basking in God's presence. You're focused on God, you're looking at God, you're thinking about God, but it's now it's like looking at a beautiful sunset. You're not doing anything other than just soaking it in. You're absorbing it. And I'm probably not even really doing justice by way of describing this, but if you read St. Teresa of Avila's book, The Interior Castle, she does a much better job. She's a doctor of the church, of course, I'm not. But she does a much better job of elaborating on what that is. So let's come back to you now, Susan. So let's just say you're in that shallow end of the pool. That's okay. And I dare say most Christians probably stay there their entire lives. And that's not a bad thing. So as you're praying, if you're most comfortable using those prayers that you've memorized, the prayers of the church, they're beautiful, they're rich in theology, they're precise, they're very helpful, keep doing that. And maybe in your prayers, one of your prayer intentions could be, Lord, if you wish me to go deeper into prayer, help me do so. Please draw me and open my mind so I can learn how to do this. So I would read that book by St. Teresa of Avila. That will help you. The book I recommended on the show yesterday, An Introduction to the Devout Life, St. Francis de Sales talks a bit about that as well in his helpful advice to people who want to go deeper. But don't feel as though you're doing anything improper or that you're, you know, that you're not doing something pleasing to the Lord. The fact that you're praying at all is a good thing. And if you're asking him to give you more, what did Jesus say? He said, ask and it shall be given to you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and the door shall be opened to you. So if in your temperament and your, you know, how you are as a person, if that appeals to you and you desire to experience more of it, ask the Lord for it. And I do believe he will grant it to you. So those are some thoughts. What do you think?
Thank you. That was very helpful.
I'm glad. I think you'll find this an adventure. And some people only come to that adventure later in life. Some people when they're young, but most people never even start that adventure. So if it appeals to you, if the door is there, you can walk through it. And little by little, you might find yourself going into those deeper waters.
And thank you very much, Patrick.
You're welcome. Thank you. 888-914-9149. The main thing is, everybody, pray. That's the key. Pray. Just pray. What does the Bible say? Pray always. So you don't have to be kneeling down with your eyes closed and your hands folded to be praying. You can be driving the kids to school. You can be grocery shopping. You could be praying in the frozen food aisle at your local grocery store. You can be praying at any time of the day or night. When you wake up in the morning, what I recommend is very first thing when you get up in the morning, make the sign of the cross and say your morning offering. It's what I do. Not that what I do matters one way or the other. I'm just a guy. But I've learned a few things from the real smart people, the really holy people. I try to pay attention to them. So a little tip, when you get up in the morning, as soon as you bound out of bed, make the sign of the cross, address yourself to the Lord. You're in his presence. He sees you. You see him. Lord, I love you. Brand new day. Thank you for keeping me on planet Earth for another day. Who knows what you've got in store for me today, Lord? Maybe say some of your morning prayers, perhaps an Our Father, three Hail Marys, or maybe pray a decade of the Rosary. You can do that as you're getting dressed. You can do that as you're brushing your teeth. You can do that as you're walking down the stairs to go fire up the coffee machine. You can begin your day with prayer, and I'm here to tell you, if you begin your day with prayer habitually, your day will be so much better because you're going to get off on the right foot. You're in the presence of God. It makes it easier for you to pray throughout the rest of the day because you've set the tone. Of course, the great saints will tell you also, not only pray in the first thing in the morning, but before you go to bed at night, say your prayers, maybe an examination of conscience, act of contrition. Oh my God, I am heartily sorry for having offended thee. That prayer. Ask your guardian angel to watch over you. Ask our Blessed Mother to pray for you. So these are all, you might think of them as sort of monuments of prayer that mark, they're like mile markers in your day. And when you've reached the end of your day and all of your work is done and it's time to rest, close your eyes, you know that it's a day that's been spent, at least to some extent, in prayer. And the more you do it, the easier it gets. That's one of those beautiful things about this, is that it's not like trying to climb up a cliff. It's like exercising muscles. The more you exercise them, the stronger they get, and the more weight you can carry. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Kelly in Jacksonville, North Carolina. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. I was calling because my four-year-old who goes to preschool, we live on a military base, and she goes to preschool in the base school. I recently learned that there's a little girl in her class who has now become a little boy. And completely blindsided.
Little girls can't become little boys, and little boys can't become little boys. I understand what you're saying. I'm just putting a little editorial comment in there. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, yeah, I just don't even really know how else to phrase it. But this happened this week, and so she's home with me now. My gut reaction was I don't want her to be exposed to this any more than she already has, and maybe if we never talk about it again, she'll forget it ever happened. I do have three other children who go to the school that are older, and my inside source has informed me that this particular case is the only case in the school. But I'm, first of all, I don't want to traumatize my four-year-old by abruptly pulling her out of her school, which she likes. So I want to make sure I'm doing the right thing there. I mean, traumatize her unnecessarily. And then also with my older children, I have one of them who loves the school and passionately loves the school, but I just feel like this is a red flag that I just can't ignore. We only have one more year in this town anyway, so I had been leaning towards just letting her go back next year before this happened. But then this happened, I'm just wondering, is this God's... I'm sorry, no. Four-year-old is not, definitely not going back. I have a 9-year-old who really loves the school. And this isn't happening in her grade yet. Yeah, so I'm just like, I would rather not even talk to my young children about this issue. My 9-year-old and even my 11-year-old, but they're wondering, you know, why their little sister isn't going to school anymore. And, you know, and so my daughter kind of caught me off guard this morning, my older daughter, and she asked me, and I just told her, and she was visibly upset. You know, she never had heard of such a thing. And then I was like, well, what should I have told her? I maybe shouldn't have told her that was what had happened. But anyway, so here we are now, just trying to figure out how to move forward.
Yeah, you want a little advice or a second opinion, maybe?
Yes, please.
Okay. All right. Well, first thing I would recommend for you, Kelly, would be to get a book called Irreversible Damage, How the Transgender Craze is ruining, I think it's ruining.
Yes,
our,
I read that book.
Daughters.
I read that book.
Okay. Okay, well, then you're ahead of the crowd then, because you know some of the background to what's going on here and why. Because a lot of people, they don't understand what is going on here. Why is this even happening, and how can I talk about this with my children? So if you've already read that book, then much of what I'm about to say you already know. But for the sake of saying it, this may sound counterintuitive. First of all, I do agree and I support you in your desire to shield your children from things that are age inappropriate for them. Absolutely. And everything you can do to do that is, in my view, the right thing to do. On the other hand, and this is where my advice might seem counterintuitive, even though you shouldn't have to talk to your 9-year-old about this issue, she should be allowed to be innocent. It's just not the way things are. I mean, think of the children in Ukraine, if I can borrow an analogy here. You know, these little kids in Ukraine shouldn't have to see dead bodies as they're fleeing from their homes that have been bombed. They shouldn't have to see the things that some of these children are seeing. But that's just how it is. And in some situations, you can't change the way it is, and you have to work with how things are. So for that reason, it may be entirely appropriate for you, and I think it probably would be. And again, I'm just offering some free advice. This is just how I might approach it if I were in your situation. I would sit down and say, you know what, I really wish we didn't have to talk about this because it's kind of gross, but there's something going on in our world right now where some people have a very weird, wrong idea about boys and girls, men and women, male and female. And some people, they have believed a lie that people have told them, that a boy can become a girl or that a girl can become a boy. That can happen even if the boy dresses like a girl, even if he has a girl's name. Even if he wants you to call him she or he or her, it doesn't mean that he's actually become a girl. But there are people who believe that that's really true, but it's not true. So you, darling daughter of mine, you need to know that this is false. This is not true. So when you see people who are saying this and doing this, even if you're not talking to them or, you know, interacting with them, just you know that what they're saying is not true. There are some people who think the earth is flat. That's not true. The earth is a sphere. I'm sure she studied planets by now. And you know how the moon is round and how planet Earth is round and the planets are round. There are some people who believe a lie. They think the earth is flat. Now, maybe someday they'll find out the truth. Maybe they won't. Maybe they'll believe the truth. Maybe they won't. But in the meantime, as long as you know that the earth is not flat, that way, when you meet people who insist that the earth is flat, you know it's true. And perhaps if you handle it that way, you just basically poured a foundation. It doesn't have to be very much, very elaborate, but she now knows, okay, there's something wrong with this, and when I bump into it, at least I know what the truth is. And then as she gets older, she's 9 years old now, so when she's a little older, 10, 11 years old perhaps, it could happen sooner depending upon the circumstances, you may have to fill her in more detail. And it's sad. It's like having to tell your child about abortion. I mean, would that we didn't have to tell our 9-year-olds that there are freaky people out there who are pushing and promoting killing unborn babies. What a terrible thing to have to reveal to a child. And yet, in the world we live in, that's required. You have to have that talk with them at an earlier age than you would want. And I think this transgender ideology issue is now, in a similar way, something that parents, they have to inoculate their children against earlier rather than later, because if you don't do it soon enough, by the time the teachers are done with them, first, second, third grade, it may be too late.
Okay. And do you agree a big mistake to allow any of my children to go to this school next year?
Well, that'd be hard for me to say, only because, I mean, you're in a much better position to gauge that. But what you said to me was that this is an isolated incident and that it's not happening in any other format. If I had to throw a dart, I would say if you kept your children in that school and just closely monitor the situation, that would seem to me to be the wisest course of action, so that you're not disrupting them. If you're only going to be there for another year anyway, and if you're you know, an eagle-eyed mommy watching what's going on, if you see a sign of trouble, you step in and handle it. But you might be able to get through this next year unscathed, and that's good for the kiddos.
Okay.
And then you move on to the next place. I don't get the impression that, you know, it's a 3-alarm fire that you've got to pull the kids out of there, based upon what you've said.
Okay. Okay, but definitely keep the 4-year-old out of the class, right, where it's actually happening.
Well, again, that's not for me to say. You know, I think if it's upsetting and confusing to your 4-year-old, I would put her welfare. I mean, obviously you would do this. I don't mean that you wouldn't, but I would want to put her welfare above all else. And so if being in the class is detrimental to her, then I wouldn't have her in the class. And then you can just tell the other kids, hey, there's some just strange stuff going on in that class, and we don't want your sister there, and everything's fine. Go to school.
Okay.
All right.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it, Kelly. Good to talk to you. Let's pray for our children, shall we? I'll be right back.
Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code PATRICK for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Today's show brought to you in part by Sony Pictures production Father Stu. This biopic shares the conversion and ordination of Stuart Long, in movie theaters nationwide on April 13th.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Cyrus, if your name were Adrian, I could say, yo, Adrian,
yo,
on the show,
Adrian,
all the time.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Hey, I want to give a big shout out and lots of beautiful love to the, I don't even know how many people were there last night at Our Lady of Peace Catholic Church in Marshfield, Wisconsin. And I'm broadcasting this morning from very plush studios in beautiful downtown Marshfield, Wisconsin, the pulsing, throbbing metropolis. They were very kind to me last night. Father Robertson, the pastor, welcomed me. And so shout out, lots of beautiful love to all of you who attended the event last night. Thank you for that. And I look forward to seeing you again tonight. 888-914-9149. Let's get back to the phones, shall we? Let's go now to, where are we going to go? Let's go to Joshua in Albuquerque. Good morning, Joshua.
Good morning, Patrick. My brother is incarcerated, and we talk every day. And he wanted me to ask you a question. He wanted me to ask you, what makes us think we can bless God?
Say that again now. What makes us think what?
What makes us think that we can bless God? Like say, bless the Lord, all my soul, all my being, bless his holy name.
It's a figure of speech. We can't bless God in the sense that we think of God blessing us or the priest gives you a blessing. It's not like that. It's proclaiming God's glory. It's a way of extolling God for his blessings. It's not us blessing God in that sense. So it's really just a figure of speech. And I can understand why someone might trip over it, because when you say it, bless the Lord, O my soul, or, you know, I bless the Lord, it can give the impression that we think we can impart a blessing to God, and we can't, because God is perfect in every respect. There's nothing we can give him that he doesn't have, strictly speaking. So it's to be understood in a, it's an exclamation of joy, of giving praise and glory to God. That's all it really is. It's nothing more than that.
Okay.
Okay, Joshua? All right. I'm glad we could handle it. Thank you. Let's go now to Listina in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Listina.
Hi, Patrick. The name is Lustinia, and thank you for taking my call.
My mistake.
I just wanted to make a comment. Oh, no problem. It's not a common name, so I hear it all the time. I was just wanting to make a comment about the mother that just called in about her child that's 4 years old. I encountered a very similar situation. However, mine was different in that I adopted my son and when he was a newborn baby. And one of the things that people would say to me often is, oh, where did you get him? He's so cute. What country did he come from? And then they would just make comments, and I would say, hey, he's a baby. He doesn't understand it. We can talk about this and have an adult conversation about this. And one day when he was 4 years old, a woman went up to my son and my husband and said the very same thing. Oh, where did you get him? Now, what country did he come from? And my husband just looked at her and said, we will have an adult conversation about this later. And it just kind of scared my son when he heard her say that, because now he understood a little bit more. So what I did was, my husband and I, we sat down with my son that was 4 years old, and we just said, hey, let's talk about what happened, and let's explain to you that I'm your mother, your dad is your father. However, you did have a birth mother. And when we sat down and talked with our son, just very clearly, just explained everything to him, he asked us some questions. He didn't understand everything, but then he said, oh, okay. And in his age range of understanding what happened, he asked some very interesting questions that made us understand he understood what we were talking about. And then he just hugged both of us and just told us how much he loves us. And then he said, hey, is it all right if I go and play now? So my husband and I looked at each other and we're like, well, we think we did the right thing. And, you know, as he continued to progress, we talked about his adoption, and he became very, very comfortable with it. So it was truly amazing for us. And I just thought I'd pass on that comment for the mother that's dealing with this situation, that if she just lovingly tells her daughter what you said, with, you know, maybe have a family meeting and just explain that this is not okay, or this is how it is. It's amazing what her daughter will encounter, or her child. I can remember she said a boy or a girl, but I just know that it was such a blessing that it happened. We had planned on telling him when he was just a little bit older than four, but we continued to encounter this problem and it didn't go away. So having addressed it at the age of four truly ended up becoming a blessing for our family.
Got it. That makes sense. So if I understand the transference here, because I wasn't really sure what the connection was until just now. And as I understand what you're saying is that although it was a different situation, this was adoption in your child's case, as opposed to a transgender issue. It was upsetting and difficult to comprehend. And so having a conversation at the age of four helped so that going forward, that problem wasn't upsetting or difficult for the child after that. Is that the point you're making?
Yes, that was the point I was making. It's amazing how just talking to a four-year-old, there's so many things that they do understand, because they understand at a very early age, as we all know. So I just wanted to say it truly was amazing how my four-year-old was able to comprehend what had happened at the time and didn't understand everything until we set him down, spoke to him about it, because they are two completely different issues. But I was just kind of making that comment about the age of four. And when you have a loving relationship with your child, if you just sit down and explain it to them, whether they understand it or not completely. They're going to understand parts of it. They know that you're just wanting their best interest.
Right. I agree with that. So that's wise of you to do what you did. The one difference here, and I validate what you just said, but I'd like to add a little footnote to it. And thank you for the call, Listinia, and I apologize for mispronouncing your name. The one distinction here to be aware of is that the adoption issue, as difficult and for a young child, maybe as incomprehensible as that can be, it doesn't ruin his or her innocence in a sexual sense. And that's the added layer of problem for the mom who called earlier, because we're dealing with a four-year-old child who's now having to be introduced into a world that she has no business knowing anything about for quite a long time. Children should not be told about things like this because they're not prepared for them. They're not ready for them. And in a case like that, a four-year-old is not really ready to know anything about the transgender ideology. It's forced upon them, sadly. And so, I mean, I remember there was a trip to some really, really good family friends that we were going to send our kids on. This is a long time ago. This is like, I don't know, 30 years ago, maybe a little bit less than that. But our oldest three kids, who are now all married with children of their own, but they were going to go on an airplane and fly to a different state to visit with our very dear family friends. They had a large family, a lot of kids. And we knew that they knew lots of other kids in the area, and so that our children were going to be going to a place where we wouldn't be there with them for that week-long trip. It was a special treat for them. And this was back in the days when I could actually, in the airport, I could actually get on the airplane with my kids and make sure they were buckled into their seats. And, you know, we paid the airline for a chaperone to shuttle them back and forth. And it all worked out just great. But my son, my oldest son, was 11. And I just realized that I was probably going to have the talk with him before he went on this trip. Now, I hadn't planned on doing that until he maybe was a little bit older. So thinking, as I think about it, he might have been 10, maybe getting close to 11. So Nancy and I talked about it. And we thought, you know, what's the right thing to do? And we concluded that the right thing to do under the circumstances was to give him some inoculation. So I had a modified 10-year-old kid version of the talk. And I kind of introduced him in a general roundabout way to some concepts that he didn't know anything about. But I wanted to do it. And as his father, I felt that I needed to do it so that if it happened that hanging out with the friends of our friends, and I can't control what those other kids are, and I can't control, you know, who comes over, et cetera, from a distance. So in retrospect, I think it was the right decision. It wasn't my preference, but it was the right decision under the circumstances. So you may need to do that with your children, and you'll have to evaluate it on a case-by-case basis. It's the kind of thing where you have to take into account the temperament of the child and, you know, what is this child's level of comprehension? How innocent is this child? I would say at all costs, do everything you can to protect and preserve their innocence, especially on the matters of the birds and the bees, as long as you can. You don't want to unnecessarily shelter them. And as you know, the world really wants to get them out of that shelter as quickly as possible. But be vigilant. And one other thing to remember is that eventually, when it comes time for your exit interview, may that be many happy years from now, this will be on the list of things you're going to have to talk about. If you're a mom or a dad, this is going to be on the list you're going to have to answer for. So act accordingly. Prepare now. Do the right thing now, and everything will be good then. I'll be right back.
You have a special place in God's plan for the world. Learning about Christ's role in history can change your life and strengthen your faith. Right now, get free access to Christendom College's online history class at principalsclasses.com/Madrid.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. Yeah. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Yeah. Relevant Radio.
Well, as long as we're talking about men and women, let's extend the conversation just a little bit further. An article here from Life News, we'll get it posted for you. It takes up a situation that went down in the last week or so with the Supreme Court nomination hearings for Ketanji Brown Jackson. And you remember we played that audio where she was asked by one of the senators or one of the congressmen. Senator, yeah. Can you define a woman? Can you provide a definition for the word woman? Oh, yeah, you heard that, Cyrus. She says, I'm not a biologist. So the Republican senator said, can you provide a definition for the word woman? Can I provide a definition? No, I can't. You can't? Not in this context. I'm not a biologist.
Have you seen any of the memes that have popped up from that? Like, oh, it's a picture. Yeah. Like, what is this? And it's a picture of a zebra. And she's like, I'm not a zoologist.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a biologist either, but I know what a woman is. And you don't have to be, all you have to do is like be human and you can know. So the essence of this article is that they, who was it? It was the Daily Caller, I guess. They reached out to 50 Senate Democrats to see if any of them could offer a definition of the word woman. And the short answer is, none of them could or would give a definition of the word woman. One of them said, Dr. Addison. I want to get the first name here. Yeah, I'll have to come back to it. But one of the people who was questioned responded, I do not define what a woman is because I do not identify as a woman. Womanhood is something that is an umbrella term. It includes people who identify as a woman. It's to each their own. Each woman, each man, each person is going to have a different relation with their own gender identity and define it differently. By the way, everybody, this is what's known in philosophical circles as radical antinomianism, and radical nominalism for that matter too. Nominalism, at least in this context, is a philosophical school of thought that is wrong, by the way, but it holds the view that there are no supercategories like men and women, for example. There are just individual things that might be a man or a woman, but not in a categorical sense. And this is, we're seeing this full blown now where people are not willing to say what everyone knows a woman is, a female of the species, the member of the species, in this case, the human species, that can conceive and bear young within their bodies. Produce milk, etc. I mean, there's certain markers of what a woman is.
Come on, man.
And seriously. And the fact that we even have to, you know, debate this point is ridiculous. So just remember that 50 Senate Democrats either couldn't or wouldn't offer a definition of the word woman. Where are all the feminists, by the way? J.K. Rowling is sort of a late bloomer. But where are the Gloria Steinems and the Gloria Allreds and the, you know, all the rest of them? The bra-burning ladies from the 1970s, the Virginia Slims, you've come a long way, baby, ladies from the 1970s. You know, where are they? I thought they were all about women's rights, but if you can't even define what a woman is, then you can't have women's rights. Oh, by the way, Cyrus, this is a quick formula for you. You know how people say that the patriarchy, this terrible thing, the patriarchy is oppressing people in society? You've heard that before, right? I know you live a sheltered life, but you've heard at least that before, haven't you?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You have. Okay. So here's the quick formula. If male and female, because patriarchy is based upon maleness, right? So if male and female are simply social constructs that don't actually exist, then there can be no patriarchy. Poof, gone. Problem solved. Hence, there is no patriarchal oppression of anybody because the patriarchy can't exist if male and female are simply social constructs that don't actually exist. In fact, they're just what people are assigned to or what people choose from themselves. You see how easy that was, Cyrus?
What is going on? What are you doing?
I need to get put in charge of something. Because, man, oh, man, if I could get put in charge of something, I'm in charge of this microphone, and
fact.
I really like that. But if I could get put in charge of the department of something in the U.S. government, maybe I can make some changes. I don't know. But don't vote for me. I'm unelectable. Okay. I'm unelectable.
There, I know at least three people that would vote for you.
Well, thank you, but I am unelectable. You know how fast my name would be destroyed in terms of people on the left saying, there's no way this guy's going to make it. All they'd have to do is listen to this program.
Yeah, they would make you disappear quick.
What's the old saying? If nominated, I will not accept, and if elected, I will not serve. I'm just going to do my radio show. That's what I love doing. This is what I dig. But if I were electable and I'm not, man, would I love to run a department of something. Department of,
I'm surprised
how about
that's
the Ministry of Truth? I want to run the Ministry of Truth because right now it's Orwellian because it's anything but truth. But if I can be appointed to the Ministry of Truth and I don't have to run for an election, and if I can do it part-time because I've got to do my radio show, I have some plans. I have some schemes on what I would do. That's just daydreaming. 888-914-9149.
That's for the meeting at the docks. That's the meeting at the docks, Patrick. Not for the radio show.
Is that
show.
What it is? Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. All right. Nicole in Mayone, New York. It's nice to have Malone, New York. Excuse me. It's nice to have you on the phone.
My follow up, though. When should we touch base?
Someone's
we're
not
touching
ready.
Base right now.
Yeah, we're touching base.
You ready to touch base, Nicole?
Should we listen in on Nicole's conversation?
Okay.
Why not? Hey, Nicole. Just mm-hmm. you and me, Nicole, now. Touching base.
Okay. Sure.
All right.
Okay, she's definitely not ready.
All right. So we don't want to put Nicole too much on the spot. Nicole, stand by, even though you don't know you're standing by. Hey, Thomas, can you get with Nicole, please, and we'll get her sorted. Let's go to Leon now in Fort Myers Beach, Florida. Hi, Leon.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. It's a pleasure listening to you and a blessing to hear you speak the gospel truths.
Thank you, sir.
So I have a little question for you. You're welcome. Easter is coming up, the Passover, and we know Jesus several times in the Gospels mentioned that he would spend 3 days and three nights in the earth, as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the whale's belly. And when we also know that he rose the first day of the week, that's not disputed. That would be Sunday. And, of course, they're using biblical time when the day starts in the evening and goes to the next evening of the following day. That's the Genesis time that they were using in the days of Jesus there. So when he spent 3 days and three nights in the earth and counting back from Saturday evening, which was when the first day of the week starts, we come up with Friday night, Thursday night, and Wednesday night. So he was put in the grave Wednesday before sundown, which means he was crucified on Wednesday. And I know there's some confusion with talking about a Sabbath or high day in John chapter 19, verse 31, but that was a special Sabbath. It was not the Sabbath of the Saturday or the last day of the week. And that confuses a lot of people, I think, when they start their counting and they think Friday was when he was crucified. Well,
let me interrupt, if I may. I don't hear a question in there, so I'm wondering, did I miss something? Is there something you wanted to ask about?
Yes, we're there right now, Patrick. Why do we observe Good Friday as the day when Jesus was crucified, when actually it could not have been, since we got to count back 3 days and three nights?
Well, the reason is because the Lord rose on Sunday, the first day of the week, and you count backward from that. So he was in the tomb for a portion of 3 days. So Good Friday, he was there from the time he died, about 3 p.m. And then he was in the tomb all day on Saturday. And then we don't know what time he rose from the dead on Sunday morning, but we know he rose from the dead on Sunday. So that was the third day. So my respectful response to you would be that it's a misunderstanding on your part to say that because it says 3 days and three nights that should be taken literally. It's a figure of speech, and it is a reference to Jonah, but it wasn't intended to be understood in a strictly literal sense, as in three sidereal periods of 24 hours. It is understood to be 3 days, and that figure of speech, 3 days and three nights. Now, the way that we can demonstrate this is that Jesus rose on the first day of the week. He rose on Sunday. And so we count back from that, and all of it matches up just perfectly. I hope that's helpful, and I do appreciate your conversation on this topic. It is important as we approach Easter. Thank you. Let's go now to Dusty in Salt Lake City. Good morning, Dusty.
Good morning. I was wondering, can you tell me how someone could discern signs from God without being too superstitious or kind of a mystic about it?
Well, there's nothing wrong with being a mystic. Being a mystic is good. So yeah, don't be afraid of that. But on the other hand, if I'm reading you correctly, I mean, you're right to say you don't want to go overboard in being,
yes.
You know, there's a word for it. It's credulous is one word. There's another word. It's escaping me right now. I'll have to think about what it is. Maybe it'll come to me. But the point here is that, yes, you do want to be, you want to be discerning so that you're not left with an erroneous impression that every single thing that happens must be your guardian angel doing something, or it must be the devil, or it must be. Sometimes they are, but often they're not. So I would recommend, first of all, a book called Spiritual Theology. It's by Father Jordan Ammann, A-U-M-A-N-N. And in that book, he covers, among many other things, he covers in detail spiritual or pseudo-spiritual phenomena, things that to us appear as though they might be supernatural or preternatural, in the case of, say, yes, demonic activity, but how to know whether or not it's just something in your own imagination, or it's just a, yes, pure coincidence, or if it is something of that nature. Now, that's one thing I'd suggest. So the book, again, Spiritual Theology by Father Jordan Ammann. The second one would be to go over to the Aquinas 101 YouTube channel. These are a series of wonderful, brilliant little videos. And by little, what I mean is they're typically between 7 and 10 minutes long. And they're mini treatises on different aspects of the faith, the nature of God, the nature of angels. They have a couple that I've benefited from greatly on the issue of chance and providence and how the two go together and how things that seem random and purely chance to us are actually part of God's plan of providence. And his providence includes and entails what we think of as chance probabilities. So I would watch those two as well, because having a grasp of seeing God's providence unfold would take into account then, what about these things that take place in my life? Is this really my guardian angel stepping in and doing something for me? Or is this just a natural event that's part of God's providence? And I think it'll help you more clearly discern when one is the other. Now, for my part, Dusty, for what it's worth, over my years, I have almost never discerned God's will or some movement of God in my life in the moment. I almost always, 99 times out of 100, it's always in the rearview mirror. It's only then, as I look back on it later, and I say, oh, now I see. If I hadn't done this, or if I hadn't gone there, or if this hadn't happened, that wouldn't have happened. And usually for me, it's much clearer in retrospect. But in the moment, I'm just trying to say, Lord, please guide me. So yes, that would be my humble advice.
Right. Okay. Oh, well, thank you. It was just the only reason I asked is it was just a weird story, because I'm agnostic, and I listen, even though I'm agnostic, I listen to you on my way to work. And when I,
thank you,
I was listening to you, sure, and you were talking to a lady, a Catholic woman, about her attendance to I can't remember, so I don't want to misquote it. It was some kind of a wedding, and you said, mm-hmm, no, I don't think that would be appropriate. And I was in kind of a bad mood that day, and I remember thinking, I was like, God, I don't think I could be Catholic. It's too restrictive. And so then I get to work, I park, and I get my backpack out of the back seat, and uh-huh, my backpack had fallen over, and the rosary my Catholic wife, put in the back pocket fell out at my feet. And I was just like, that's never happened before. Nothing has ever fallen out ever. So
I like
I just
that.
Thought I'd ask you.
Hey, Dusty, well, first of all, you're my new best friend. Please call me back another time. And I can't wait for the day when you're no longer an agnostic. I'll be working for that.